This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hey everybody, this is episode number 99 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
And I'm Chris.
Katie is out tonight. She has food poisoning. She emailed us at like 5 in the morning and was like, I'm pretty sure I'm not going to be able to make it. So our hearts go out to her and we hope that she feels better soon. But we did find somebody awesome to fill her seat tonight. She is a busy person. I feel like she does everything. She's a streamer. She's a producer. She plays Magic. Now she's a podcaster. I mean, like, is there anything I forgot? We're all big fans of her. We really love her. She is Athena Froelich. Hello.
Hi. What's good?
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
I'm happy to be here. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We have been fans of yours for a while. You were one of our first, women of excellence. Once we first started the show, we came up with that segment and you were one of the first women that we saw that was like, we really want to plug her and we think she's doing something awesome. And you've blown up.
Yeah. A little bit. It's still very bizarre to me. I feel like I just do things and then put them out in the world. And then if people like them, I keep doing them. So it's pretty cool that I've been able to sort of, make a career out of Magic at this point.
Yeah, it's like, so you started off streaming and then you moved into, you did coverage at GP Oakland, which was fantastic.
And then from there, I applied to do the Super League. So starting with Vintage Super League to do the production for those. And ever since then, I've kind of gotten more into the behind the scenes of the coverage work. And I've been really loving doing that.
And you don't get enough praise for how much you do. Like, we got to peek behind the curtain when we were working with you on Community Super League. And, you know, there's just so much that goes into that. And I really just don't think you get enough credit. Like, that's a lot of work.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it is. It's a lot of prep work. And then the night of the show, it's very stressful just sitting in front of your computer for however long the show is. Sometimes it's like 6 or 7 hours, just having to be hyper-focused and making sure everything's running smoothly and working the way it is. But it's a lot of fun. I know, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
And I'll have you know, Athena, I still hear your voice in my head. Like, if I'm streaming, I hear you going, pop out your graveyard. Do this. Shuffle the hand a little bit. Come on. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, Athena. And I just feel like you're sort of the angel on my shoulder whenever I'm streaming. I still hear that voice in my head. So I want to talk about some of the other projects that you have going on, because I feel like you're about to get even busier. You just started your own podcast called Married to the Game.
Oh, yeah. It was kind of bizarre. Essentially, I checked Twitter one day and I had a message from Jennifer, also known as Mrs. Mulligan, and Jamie, known as Jamie Topple. She streams. And they were like, hey, you want to do a podcast with us? And I was like, yeah, I guess so. So that's how that happened. So then we had a Skype call to kind of flesh out what we wanted to do and what the podcast would be about and what our goals were with it. And since we're all married women, we came up with the name Married to the Game. And we're still trying to figure out exactly what direction we want to go in. But I think our first episode was pretty good. And we're just going to try to build on that moving on.
Yeah, I listened to it the other day and I was really impressed with the quality of it. I really thought it sounded crisp. I thought you all sounded really eloquent. I know when we had Jamie on the show, she was so nervous that she was going to sound like, you know, nervous or like she was a beginner. And I remember when we ended the call, she was like, gosh, y'all are so eloquent. And I feel like she sold herself short because she was really, you know, eloquent and she was well spoken too. And I feel like you each have distinct personalities. You know, you each have different experiences with the game. And I think you're definitely onto something with that lineup.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. There are people I've interacted with before. Like, I've watched their streams and talked to them a little bit. But as far as my friends go in the Magic community, I wouldn't consider them to be, you know, close friends that I've had for a while. So it's kind of, we're all getting to know each other as we make the show and as we talk to each other. And it's interesting to see just how different we are and how that contributes to making, you know, good ideas into a podcast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're also hard at work on, I understand it's a team draft league.
Yeah. So, that's our newest Super League. We were kind of after I did the Magic Online Championship. And I do all my producing with, Randy Bueller. So after the show, we were kind of sitting down and we're at dinner and Marshall's there for some reason. Owen was there with Helene and a bunch of other Wizards people. And we were kind of talking and we were saying, well, what would be a good idea for a Super League? And somehow we're like, well, maybe how can we make Limited interesting? Because when you watch Limited at a Pro Tour or a GP, it's really hard to see. There's glare on the cards. And it's just kind of hard to follow for the commentators in the booth and for everyone at home. Whereas Magic Online clearly lays out all the cards. So we're like, well, how can we make Limited fun and exciting for people? And team drafting is ultimately how we came up with that. Team drafting is 3v3, and it's commonly done after Pro Tours. Some people call them money drafts, but because there's sometimes a little betting on the line, but we're not supposed to talk about that. So we kind of sat down. We're like, okay, well, if we did the team drafting, what would our teams look like? And as we started talking about it, we realized that we had some really strong people that would want to be involved in the show. And it'd be a way to, you know, do a little bit more of a competitive Super League, probably the most competitive one we've done yet, while also appealing to the Limited audience, who I feel like doesn't get enough love.
Absolutely. And it seems like team events in general are just sort of enjoying this resurgence where it's like, you know, you have SCG that is, you know, taking an open that was already one format and going, okay, we're going to make this a team constructed because the last one was so well received. And then you played in San Antonio, with the MTA girls, and that was huge and people really enjoyed watching that. And it just seems like team events are having a moment where, you know, people want more. They love watching them. They love seeing, you know, their favorites kind of band together. And it's just really great to watch.
They're also the most fun tournaments to play in. And I know, to the point where Eric, who, you know, he's been playing, my husband, who's been playing Magic competitively for over 10 years now, he actually looks forward to the team GPs. Whereas normally he's like, oh, I've got to go to this city. I don't want to travel here. This is kind of a pain. Whenever it's a team tournament, he's like, oh, what deck am I going to play? Like, oh, like I'm so excited. I'm talking with my friends and we're trying to come up and strategize and practice together. And it's just, there's a lot of energy and excitement before a team tournament.
Yeah, I think that's something that tends to get kind of swept under the rug. Like, I remember when I had Chian on my show, and even when I had Kai back when I was doing the deck tease, and, you know, they were talking about how, you know, I think I'd asked Kai at one point, you know, why did you walk away from, like, you were at the top of your game back then and you just stopped playing? And the long story short was his friends didn't play anymore. And that was just so foreign to me, where it's like, at the time I was like, you gave it all up for your friends? It just sounded so goofy. And then, like, eventually it kind of made sense. And I remember having LSV on at one point, and he was like, yeah, you know, Paul Chian makes the Pro Tour for me. And I think that kind of gets lost when they see these hyper competitive guys, that it really is about the friendships.
Yeah, it really is. And I think if you're ever at a Pro Tour afterwards on Sunday night, if you want to hang out with pro players and see what it's actually like, you should scout out any of the local karaoke bars, and you'll see everyone is friends with each other. It's just one giant group of, you know, celebrating their love for Magic and, you know, celebrating their friendships. And it's just really cool. I don't know, I feel like that gets lost a lot in Magic tournaments.
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of questions for you, Athena, before we get into the meat of the show. So when did you first start playing Magic?
I started playing Magic when I was 7 years old. I don't know what set it was, because I was mostly just playing with my dad's old cards. Basically, so my elementary school had a, like, summer program type thing, and you could, like, go and play soccer for a week, or you could go and play basketball. And I was not athletic at all. My dad noticed that one of the teachers was offering, you know, a Magic the Gathering week-long summer camp. So he was like, oh, this is great. I love this game. My daughter would really enjoy it, because I was pretty nerdy and into, like, video games and stuff already. So he signed me up for that. And I remember very vividly, it was like sitting on the floor of the gym with these paper play mats. And then, you know, like the little gems that go in the bottom of fish bowls.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would put those on the playmat and you have 20 of them for your life. We only had five extra, which is actually funny, because then later on when I was playing Magic as an adult, I was like, oh, I wonder if Lifelink was a mechanic when I was a kid, because you would quickly run out of these little gems. So I kind of played, you know, kitchen table Magic throughout, you know, as a child and then into high school. And I remember my first FNM was right after I graduated from high school, and I had a terrible experience at my local game store. And then I was like, okay, well, maybe this isn't for me. Maybe I should only play Magic with my friends. I don't want to play Magic with strangers. So when I went to college, I thought about joining the local Magic group, but then I had another bad experience. So I was kind of off it. I was like, all right, you know, maybe Magic as an adult is not that fun as it was when I was younger. But kind of got dragged into going to a Theros pre-release. Essentially, I was headed to Baltimore to go to a music festival. And on the car ride up, we get a text from the kid I was going with. His younger brother was like, I want to go to a pre-release, but my mom says I can't because she doesn't want to pick us up at 4 a.m. It's like, I'll pay for you guys to go to the pre-release if you give me a ride home. So we were like, ah, screw it. Like, you know, this will be fun. And then from there, I went to the Born of the Gods pre-release and the Journey into Nyx pre-release. And then right around M15, which is probably my start into competitive Magic, I discovered limited resources. And then I discovered Kenji's stream on Twitch. And mm-hmm. from there, it was kind of, you know, a little black hole. It just sucked me in.
You were hooked.
Yeah, I was hooked. I remember, like, the Journey into Nyx pre-release, I did terrible. I was like, I think I won one game total. But then after, like, listening to the limited resources pre-release primer, I went 4-0, and I was like, oh, this is great. Like, winning is so much more fun than losing. And that was it. I was hooked from then on out.
Would you say that limited is your favorite format?
No. I barely play limited now, which is funny because before it was. I would say my favorite format is... It's vintage, but I can't play vintage. I can only watch it. Like, I'm not skilled enough to play it. So my favorite format to play is any modern deck that has Primeval Titan in it.
Hello. Yeah. Chris has been, you know, inducted into the cult of Primeval Titan.
That is true. A strong agree.
And the one question we always ask Athena, our lady magic players that we have on the show, is what has your experience been like as a lady magic player?
That's hard. I feel like my experience today is a lot different. Like, I feel like I feel part of a female magic community, which is really strong and wonderful. Like, when I go to tournaments, I normally end up hanging out with other women at the tournament, and we're all friends together, and it's really great. And there's, like, a sense of camaraderie now. But when I first started, it wasn't like that. It was pretty difficult, to be honest. I don't know. I don't know if you guys still get this, but if you walk into a game store, you get this, like, you walk in, you're like, oh, I'm the only girl here. And everyone kind of turns and looks at you and you're like, this is really uncomfortable. And I felt like that for many years. And especially when I first tried to break into playing into FNMs and such, I felt that very strongly. And it was a very negative experience, but I mean, I don't, this is a tricky question. I don't really know how to talk about it, because I feel like there are a lot of wonderful things about being a female magic player. I don't feel like my stream would have taken off the way that it did if I wasn't a female magic player, so I'm very grateful for the exposure that gave me. But at the same time, I still feel like I'm running into, you know, I feel like there's like a glass ceiling almost in magic, and I don't think we've really broken past that, and it's still very frustrating that we have to deal with that. But I'm hopeful that it's going to get better.
Yeah, that was really well put. I can certainly relate to the, you know, walking into a game store. For me, though, I tend to hear the circus music, like the ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba, because I feel like, you know, if you walk into a comic book store, you almost feel like a sideshow attraction, where it's like you feel like you should charge ticket prices to be like, yes, I am a girl and I enjoy these things. And why are we, should I make popcorn? Like, what are we doing here? Like, and so that's the thing that I hear in my head is the ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-bum, and just I feel like I should be juggling rings or something. It's very weird.
Yeah, it is strange. You know, like, there's been times I've walked in and there's 40 other people in the room and I'm the only woman there. And I'm like, this is so uncomfortable for me right now. Like, I don't know why it's so uncomfortable, but like, I don't feel safe here. And that's really, and at least in my local stores, it's a little bit better. Like, now I tend to see, you know, at least like 3 to 4 other women every single time we go to a pre-release. And that's really nice to have them there. But, whenever I've gone to like a PTQ or something, or a PPTQ, you know, I'm the only one, and it's very startling.
Well, I hope that you're comfortable with us and that you feel safe with us, because we've got a really fun show lined up tonight. So let's talk about what we did this past weekend, because it sounds like we all got some magic time. Hallie!
Yes.
You took part in a 24-hour stream.
I did. I did not do a 24-hour stream, nor would I ever do a 24-hour stream, because I need a lot of sleep. I get like 9 hours a night, so I don't think I could ever do that.
Athena, have you done a 24-hour stream?
I've done 3 of them, I think.
Jeez.
Yeah, they're not so bad.
Oh man, maybe we can get Hallie in on that or give her some pointers.
Yeah, what's your secret?
I feel like I'm okay staying up 24 hours anyways, even if I wasn't streaming, so it isn't that big of a deal to add the streaming to it. My big one is I would have it end when I'm going to bed. So I would, it's actually a little bit more than 24 hour stream of being awake, because I would start at like 7 p.m. and then go until 7 p.m. the next day. So then once you're done, you can just go to bed.
Yeah, that's not what my friend Jordan did. He started his 24 hour stream at 9 a.m. on a Saturday and ended it at 9 a.m. on a Sunday. And he just slept for the entire rest of that day.
Wow.
Yeah. But it was a lot of fun. So my friend Jordan, you were actually in his chat on Thursday, Aaron. He was the one who was streaming with Lindsay, Ian Dixon's girlfriend. Yeah. So my friend Jordan, he is a Magic player, but he's more of a variety video game streamer. He plays a lot of Overwatch. He plays a lot of Stardew Valley. On his most recent 24-hour stream, he was playing a lot of Persona 5. And I'm not a video game person. So, you know, he's asked me to come on his stream and I'm always like, I'm kind of useless at video games because I just don't really play them that much. So I came on when he was logging into Magic Online and starting to do some limited. So I was like, okay, I'm in my element. I can help with this. So there were a whole bunch of us there. Robert and I went over and of course we brought Jordan some food. Have to provide some food for people who are doing 24-hour streams. So we made some enchiladas and brought them for him. Our friend Mike Robles was there. Our friends PJ and Stephanie, who are part of the Loading Ready Run Desert Bus community, were also there. And we all hung out and we all kind of helped Jordan draft Modern Masters 2017 for the first time because he had never done that before. And it actually went pretty well. I drafted twice with him and we went 3-0 with the first deck and 2-1 with the second one, which was pretty sweet. We drafted, I think we were in red white quite a bit. We were in red white splashing black in the first deck, and then the second deck was Naya. And it was a lot of fun. We got a lot of value. We were basically splashing black for own burial rights in the first deck and just got lots of value out of, you know, unburying a Skynet Legionnaire and then like hitting them for two when they least expected it. So it was pretty good. It was a lot of fun. And it was really cool to be able to draft Magic with friends, because usually it's a solitary activity for me. Usually I'm just drafting, you know, with a group of people in person. And when I draft online, I'm usually by myself too, or sometimes with one person. But I was worried that it would be a bit of a too many cooks kind of thing where we would be, you know, arguing or being pulled in too many directions. But we actually settled on a cohesive strategy pretty easily and we're all kind of in it together. And that was really cool.
Yeah, I can certainly relate to that. You know, I don't normally draft, but you know, when we were at your house and you were like, hey, you want a cube? You know, I will cube with you because it's you and me and, you know, five of our friends. And, you know, if one of you happen to have a Modern Masters box, I would draft that. But if you weren't there, I would have no incentive to do those things. And so I can certainly relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
So Chris, you and I got a chance to play with our EDH group the other day.
We did. More fun times had by all. I still haven't won any games yet, but I've been able to hold on. One thing, one of the people in our playgroup, he has the whole Tamiyo shenanigans with doubling season, and I mentioned to him that is totally on the watch list right now, and so that could possibly be something that is banned in Commander, just because it just gets there so crazy, and he's got like the whole Super Friends thing going on, and so if we don't try to deal with him pretty quickly, it gets way out of hand and he can just do an infinite combo and it's like that's all she wrote. I am working on a new deck or two that I might want to bring. Christina, who plays with us, had mentioned that she wanted to be able to bring a different deck every time we played to kind of see how it goes. And I actually think that's a really good idea. So I was trying to go through some other scenarios. I played blue-red with Mizzix as my commander again. We have our friend with the Super Friends deck. Christina was using a Tesa Envoy of Ghosts, which is one of my favorite cards. But it was like a pain to deal with. And so, like, we had to keep trying to figure out strategies to deal with Tesa because it had, what, Swiftfire Boots or whatever it's called?
Boots.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And so it's like got hexproof. And then she had Sword of the Animist in there. And that card did like work. Like, yeah. Aaron and I are both like, what? Because we have a joke with Christina that she always has the standard special because all her cards are either cards that are perhaps popular in standard or more recent standard, or they are like draft specials. So it's just very interesting to see like all these cards that maybe only see limited play, or they're we maybe only see in standard, be like, this is in here, be like, but it's like, wow, it like all kind of comes together pretty nicely. So even Aaron was like, Sword of the Animist, I gotta look into that. So it's just like, wow, we're getting there. So that was kind of difficult to deal with. Aaron's ramping her brains out throughout the whole thing with Omnath. I'm just trying to deny as many things as Christine's trying to do and keep our other friend at bay. And I'm just like, I don't even know. But I still feel like we have a good group because the power, even though our one friend's deck is very powerful, the power continuously shifts. Like, there's times where Aaron's like, well, I'm just going to bank a shit ton of mana and I'm going to do all this stuff. And, you know, she has Sun Droplet, so she's able to, you know, prevent or have what it doesn't prevent the damage. It's you gain life back, right? From life that you
no,
lose.
So every, I still take the damage, but then for every damage that I take, I put a counter on Sun Drop, right. And then on every upkeep, I can remove it. But, and I learned this the other day, losing life does not trigger a Sun Droplet. So like when Christina was draining me, there was nothing I could do about that.
Yeah. So it was like little shenanigans from like everyone. And I'm like, I want more shenanigans. I'm like, I need to work on either changing some things in this deck or trying to do some more fun stuff. But I've really been having a lot of fun playing EDH. Like, I used to be like, EDH is for scrubs. And I'm like, I'm gonna play Magic and I'm gonna do it competitively. I'm gonna do all these things and it's gonna be so great. But then at the same time, I kind of just like being able to be, I just wanna have fun. I don't wanna think about anything else. I have all these cards that maybe I never wanted to put in a constructed deck in like modern or standard or anything like that, but this would be really good in EDH. And I'm actually looking at cards like that now to be like, oh, like this would be really sweet. So I'm having a lot of fun and we're supposed to be doing this on like a bi-weekly basis. So something to look forward to, things to learn, especially every once in a while we'll be like, can this do this? This would be good for Chris's judge test, Aaron says a lot. So we're like looking up stuff and just having fun. And I just feel good that I have found something else to do in Magic that I really do enjoy and still allows me to be creative and brew, have fun with my friends and learn something new along the way.
Yeah, I really feel like we got lucky with our pod. You know, it's given me an excuse to buy cards again. You know, I tend to be the kind of person that plays a deck until the wheels fall off. So, you know, I have Dredge in all the formats, obviously, and I have Ad Nauseam, and God willing, nothing gets banned where I can still play those decks for a while. But, you know, I'm not somebody who's constantly playing a different deck, and I also have the means to borrow cards if I need to. And so, you know, there's something, you know, kind of nice about going into a card store and having a reason to buy cards again. I want to give a shout out to a podcast called Commander's Brew. Our friend Christina recommended them, and they're a podcast, and every single commander deck they build is budget. And so they have a tapped out page with a good like 20-30 decks in there. I found a Queen Marchesa list the other day, which totaled like $40, and I was like, sure. And so I put that thing together, and that will be coming to me very soon, and then I will have three EDH decks, and you know, there's even more that I like, and you know, I'm just really having a lot of fun, and it feels affordable, which I really like. And you know, I never thought that I would ever be that person who would spoiler season comes around, you know, there's always that one person where like, you know, you know, they, Ethan Fleischer will tweet a card and like, you're first waiting to hear the competitive side. Like, is this going to see standard play? And there's always that one person like, this is going to go in my Mina and Dan Wildborn Omnath Rage deck. And you're like, go away, go away. Yeah, I was that girl. Like, they spoiled the, so Magic Mice was supposed to get the Green God. That was supposed to be our preview card. Unfortunately, it got sniped. And I remember when Evan first sent it to me, my first thought was, oh man, this could totally go in my Omnath EDH deck. And I was like, when did I become that girl? Like, oh, and so it's, you know, our EDH group has definitely left a really good impression on me, and I really enjoy the format now. And I also feel like, you know, more of my audience can kind of chat with me too. It's like, you know, when I post things on Twitter, there are people who couldn't give a damn about anything else I tweet about, whether it be Vintage or Legacy. But if I put EDH on there, they're fucking in. And they have all sorts of thoughts. And have you thought of this card? And have you tried this commander? And it really is kind of tapping into a new community. But yeah, we had a lot of fun the other day. Christina was on this really obnoxious drain list with Taysa, and she just kept bleeding us dry. And she was sitting at like 60 life at one point. And Omnath had gotten up to like 76 mana. So I had like 70, it was like a 77, 77. And I top decked a Squall Line. For those playing along at home, that is a card that you can pump a whole bunch of green mana into and do damage to all flying creatures and all players. And so I was like, whatcha at? And she goes 61, and I was like, Squall Line for 79. And she was like, isn't that all players? And I was like, yep. I was like, I'm going out on my terms. And she was like, "Welp, I got nothing against that." And I was like, "Sweet." And so, so it's all about just getting those crazy stories that you could never get in any other format, and it's just a lot of fun. Athena, do you play EDH?
I do not, but the professor recently posted a deck tech using a Leovold as a commander, and I was like, "This is the first time I've ever been actually interested in this format because that looks like so much fun."
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and Leovold is just seeing him. Leovold, can we talk about how that card is, like, warping formats?
Yeah. Busted in Vintage.
Yeah, it is now up to $50. There is a new deck that is taking over Legacy called Checkpile. Which is CZECH for those of us playing along at home. And it's basically this obnoxious four color list that is greedy as hell. And it revolves around like Leovold and Lightning Bolt and Kolaghan's Command and Brainstorm and Force of Will and a Wasteland or two and a Deathrite Shaman and a Baleful Strix. And you're like, how does this work? Like, I don't understand. And so, yeah, that's been taking over, quite a bit. And I love watching them get Blood Moon because it's what you get for being greedy. So, Chris, you also have been breaking into some streaming with your friend Aaron from Turn One Thoughtsies.
Yes, I have. We are hoping to make it a weekly affair and mostly probably do it under his account. So Aaron's always coming up with very interesting brews in Modern. And so usually he'll text me like deckless and be like, what do you think of this? Or this seems silly or something. And so now I'm getting to see a lot of it firsthand because we've been streaming or we've been having Skype calls where we're talking about different decks that he wants to play and stream on Moto using Twitch. So he was like, what do you want to play this past week? And I was like, I don't know. I'm up for whatever. So then I log on last night and we decided to do Grixis Cat Pact, which I had not seen in Modern before. So I was like, okay, we can do this. This is going to be interesting. And we had a lot of fun. I really do encourage people to watch the replay because it was just shenanigans on our side, shenanigans are on our opponent's side. At one point we were paired against someone that was trying to do Aetherworks Marvel with Tron pieces, BT dubs. The lands for Tron did not match. I was on tilt.
Oh.
It was too much. And Wood Weavers Puzzle Knots. And I was like, what? What is going on? And so even Chad is like, what is happening? We don't even know. Like, if there was anything going with Marvel, I don't know what, because like, we really didn't get to see a lot of it, but there was green white. So, I think maybe they once dropped a Wyrmcoil Engine and we were like, okay, now this makes more sense, but it was just kind of all over the place. So we just played against a variety of different decks, some established, some, you know, brews like ours. So at different points, chat was like, you know, this deck is absolute, like, crap in comparison to what we're playing right now or something. It's just like, oh my God, both of our decks are so silly. So it was just a lot of fun. And people had a very hard time dealing with Demonic Pact. They didn't really have a lot of answers for it, to the point where the aforementioned Tron player is trying to get rid of it with Oblivion Stone, but having to kind of nuke a lot of their helpful things at the same time. And so it's like, yep, now we're going to give you this pact and have fun. And yeah, you die. Sorry. So it was just a very interesting brew session, because while Aaron and I are going through, we'll sometimes be like, okay, what didn't work in this testing? What do we want to put in here instead? And so we changed a couple things around as time went on, and we streamed for about, I want to say, 3 hours. And so usually we have like a more polished product by the end, or we've learned what worked, what didn't.
Lies.
So yeah. And sometimes Aaron may or may not be requesting cards, or we're talking about just random stuff. So, and that might be part of the theme to whatever we're going to be streaming. I'm not quite sure yet. Cause I like the idea of, we have something, we'll present you with the deck, and then we'll ask chat for suggestions or try to tweak it and stuff. And so I kind of like that aspect to it. And I look forward to hopefully maybe us building a deck, you know, together, and then streaming it and being like, help us edit this. Still working out all the deets, but I've been having a lot of fun streaming with him. I think we have really good chemistry. He's like one of my best friends, and we definitely just play off each other very well and have a really good time. And it allows us to spend more time together, which is awesome because he doesn't live here. And so I get to play Magic with like my ace and hang out and get to have a good time with chat. And so it's been a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to making this, like I said, hopefully a weekly thing and brewing more craziness in Modern and just trying to show people what we got.
I love Aaron dearly, but it's frustrating when he comes into my chat when Kate's husband is there, because then you have three Aarons and no one knows who they're talking to. So you have Aaron, A-H-R-E-N, who's your friend Aaron, Aaron Gazaniga, who's Kate's husband, and then you have me. And a lot of times Kate will be streaming with me and she'll be like, so Aaron and I were going to do this. And then they're like, me Aaron, him Aaron, her Aaron. And like, you just never know who they're talking about. So like, they're individually nice people, but you just can't put us in the same room because just, you can't keep track of who's being talked about.
Oh, I hear that. Our group has like three or four different Chris's. It's to the point we have to differentiate in different ways. And it's just like, oh my God, too many Chris's.
See, Athena doesn't have that problem. She's got a really dope, unique name.
Yeah, it's kind of a curse though, because I am so bad at remembering people's names, but everyone remembers my name. So they'll be like, hey, Athena, what's up? And I'm like, oh, geez, I have no idea who you are.
Welcome to my world. Usually when people say they recognize me, I ask them one of two questions. I say, one, did we make out? And they're like, no. And I'm like, did I tilt on you? And they're like, no. And I'm like, then I really don't remember who you are. It's like, usually those are the two that are burned in my brain that, you know, I really shouldn't have done that. And then it's like, oh, we had a really great interaction. Oh, yeah, I don't. Peter? No. So the Amonkhet spoilers have been coming fast and furious. What are some new cards that y'all are looking forward to?
All the cats.
All the cats.
Just all the cats. I don't think I'll build a Tribal Cats deck, but I would really like to see people try.
I'm saving this episode in case you do.
Yeah, I just love like all the art of the cats. I really liked the Sacred Cat that you spoiled, Aaron. Mm-hmm. I really loved its little, you know, neck piece that it wears, which is really cute. But in terms of like cards that I would actually want to play with, this is kind of sound kind of weird for me, but I'm really excited about a lot of the aggressive red cards. I really liked Soulscar Mage. Like, that was a card that jumped out to me as interesting as soon as it was revealed. It's a single red for a 1/2 with prowess. So immediately I thought, okay, is this like Monastery Swift Spear? I'm already like mostly on board. If a source you control would deal non-combat damage to a creature an opponent controls, put that many -1/-1 counters on that creature instead. And I was just like, oh, that really hurts Kitchen Finks in Modern. Like, this seems pretty good. So I like that card a lot. And we also saw another card just today called Harsh Mentor, which is a 2/2 for one and a red. Whenever an opponent activates an ability of an artifact, creature, or land on the battlefield, if it isn't a mana ability, Harsh Mentor deals 2 damage to that player. And I was thinking about it, and I was initially thinking about, like, okay, is this card, like, good against Affinity? And a friend and I had a little debate about, like, okay, is this card actually, you know, good against Affinity, or is it better than Stony Silence? And then I realized, like, wait, every time someone cracks a fetch land, they take 2 damage. Like, that seems really... Well, in addition to the 1 damage that they already take for cracking a fetch land, and the 2 damage they take for potentially shocking themselves, so... This is a card that I think could have applications in Modern, especially in, you know, an aggressive red deck, which, you know, is still, you know, really viable in Modern. So I'm really excited about these cards. I think they're really cool. And I just, in general, I just really like the design space that R&D has been exploring with this set. So far, from what we've seen, it reminds me a lot of Theros, in that they're trying a lot of these really interesting new designs. Like, we have an X mana planeswalker right now. Like, we've never had that before. And that comes with a lot of risk, obviously. It'll be interesting to see, how the standard format ends up being. But I'm really excited to see what we get.
Yeah, I really agree with Hallie about Harsh Mentor. Burn is going to be playing that like no tomorrow. I have a very bad feeling, because I almost feel like they could replace Grim Lavamancer with Harsh Mentor in like heartbeats. It costs a little more, but the payoff is just too good. Like, it's just insane. And I'm already like terrified, and we're not even there yet.
Same.
Some cards that I'm kind of excited about, maybe it seems silly, but I really like this mouth card, because I just want to make hippo tokens. Like,
hippos.
I'm just going to be real. Like, I was like, I can make hippo tokens. This is fine. I want to see what kind of crazy brews end up coming out of As Foretold. Cause I definitely think there's going to be some shenanigans with that. Painful lesson, with the target player draws 2 cards and loses 2 life. I think that 8-Rack would maybe want something like that, or other like mono black or black white strategies, in Modern that could be something that's considered. And maybe I'm off base with this, but Rhonas the Indomitable seems like something good that maybe Jund or Junk would want. Because they pretty much curve out at, what, 3 at the max, anywho. So having a legendary creature with death touch and indestructible for 2 colorless and a green, it can't attack or block unless you control another creature with power 4 or greater. That's going to be pretty easy with Goyf. And for 2 colorless and a green, another target creature you control gets +2/+0 and trample until end of turn. I can see someone giving Tarmogoyf trample. That seems like a very bad scene. So that is definitely something I'm considering. And then also, Dissenter's Deliverance, an instant to destroy target artifact with cycling for a colorless and a green. With cycling coming back, and also something for artifact hate, this could be something that I could see people playing in their sideboards. I don't know if it would cross into Modern, but it has a good possibility. So there's just a lot of cards that seem very flavorful so far, that seem like they're going to make impacts across other formats, which I enjoy. And I just kind of want to see how this all plays together. I don't know that I would want to, and I was thinking about this the other day, I don't know that I'd want to play Standard with these cards, not because I don't like them, but I just don't know how this is all going to gel together with what we already have. But I think I would really want to play this set limited. So I am looking forward to that most definitely. And so I just can't wait until next weekend.
Oh man, I am garbage at card evaluation. I'm really bad. But what am I excited about? Nest of Scarabs, the whenever you put one or more minus one counters on a creature, you create that many 1/1 black insect creature tokens. Mm-hmm. That card's sweet. And so when that card first got spoiled, I was actually sitting next to Andrew Cugno, who's kind of like a renowned brewer. And I was like, Cugno, make this deck for me. Let's make it work. And he's like, all right, so we have to put the Archfiend they just spoiled in there. And then we're trying to come up with like different proliferate or sort of mechanics to abuse minus one counters. But I'm hoping that's a deck. I don't know. I like stupid synergies. That's probably my favorite thing about Magic. Otherwise, Liliana's really cool. I'm hoping maybe there's some sort of reanimator deck in Standard. I don't know if that's too much to ask for, but man, I would love to like reanimate an Ulamog or something.
You get me, Athena. You really get me. I've been casting with blue mages this whole time. Speaking of blue mages, what did you guys think of Pull from Tomorrow?
Well, it's not Sphinx's Revelation, but I'll take it.
Mm-hmm. It's nice. It'd be better if it had a little life gain in there, but yeah. I like to draw cards, and it's at instant speed, so we good.
Yeah, I think it's better than what we've been given. I'm really excited about the zombies. You know, I think zombie tribal is something people have wanted, even going back to Shadows of Innistrad. And, you know, it's always felt like it's just missing one or two cards to really bring it all home. And, you know, we have Lord of the Accursed, which is a new lord. We have Plague Belcher, which is a zombie beast, which is incredibly scary. We have Dread Wanderer, which has some Icarid-like qualities to it. You know, I think there's also some white zombie cards here. I hope that there's something here to make zombie tribal a thing, because I would 100% play Standard again if zombie tribal was a thing. I'm completely in love with Hapatra, who is the Vizier of Poisons. I was actually at work when this was spoiled. I was in the lunchroom and I literally let out a yes queen when I saw it. And I clutched my chest and I was like, yes queen. And people were like, what are you looking at? I was like, Hapatra Vizier of Poisons. And my friends were like, English? They were like, what is that? And I was like, this. And, I just think it's beautiful. I think the art is gorgeous. It's very Golgari in its flavor. I love the flavor text. I love the concept. I would love to maybe if somebody can come up with a budget EDH deck of this, I would 100% play it. I'm also really excited about Failure to Comply. I feel like the Aftermath cards, I think they are, have been kind of disappointing. I've been expecting some more kind of like, I was hoping they would be as efficient as like Flashback, where you'd have like an Ancient Grudge, you know, that are actually affordable and that you'd want to cast them. And they all just seem to be really, really expensive and the effects seem to be really middling. The only one I was really impressed with so far is Failure to Comply. I think giving Dredge or Reanimator lists a Orym's Chant type effect is really cool. It's something we've never had before. I don't know for sure that we'll play it, but it's the only one I've actually been excited about. I actually love the set as a whole. I will 100% be pre-releasing this. I haven't done a pre-release in a really long time. I want to go back to the Nissa for a second, Hallie, because, you know, not only is this an ex-Planeswalker, but she's also had a color shift. Like, apparently in the lore, she's opening herself up to new experiences, which warrants making her a blue-green Planeswalker or a Simic Planeswalker. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what you all felt about that. Like, you know, because there was some conversation on Twitter about how it's important that they tell the story behind it and not just slap an extra color on them and say, here you go. And do you think that they're doing that well, or would you like to see more of that?
Yeah, I definitely would. And I had also seen that the professor brought this up on Twitter earlier today and was saying that, like you said, we can't just put an extra color in the casting cost and not explain it. I'm not really Vorthos girl. I've been very clear about that throughout the show. But I do care a little bit about, you know, why cards are given the casting cost that they are, why they have the color identities that they do. And you know, obviously there are, you know, color balance reasons why they have to do certain things when they're developing a set, and I totally get that. But it would be cool to also hear a little bit more about it, because we've seen this happen with a couple planeswalkers recently, like Sarkhan, for example. Has been a red-green planeswalker from the beginning. His original incarnation was red-green in Shards of Alara. And then all of a sudden in, Dragons of Tarkir, he has a blue mana symbol in his casting cost. And it's like, where did that come from? And I read a little bit of the story during that block, and I didn't feel like it was ever fully explained. And similarly, Tamiyo was originally a blue planeswalker in Avacyn Restored, and then in Eldritch Moon, she was in Eldritch Moon. She is a blue, white, and green planeswalker. And blue, white, I could kind of see, but it's like, okay, I didn't really see where her green attributes came from. So I definitely would like to see that explored a bit more.
Yeah, I think it's important to show that the planeswalkers are experiencing some kind of growth, you know, especially if they're going to keep bringing them back, you know, set after set. I think it's important to not just give us the same planeswalker, and to show mm-hmm. that the things they're going through in each of these sets is being reflected on their cards. And, you know, it's important that it be reflected in the story that you read on the mothership. But I also think we need to see it in the cards, too. And, you know, I know Nissa is one of those characters that people felt really, you know, I just keep thinking of all the Ashaya jokes, you know, when the battle was going on and everything was, Ashaya, I need you. And like, you know, she was sort of pigeonholed as being this kind of one note character where, you know, you take Ashaya away and what is there? And so I think Nissa was one of those characters that really needed a shot in the arm. And I think, you know, her acknowledging that she's being a lot more open-minded, especially given how she was originally written as being kind of xenophobic, I think is really great. And I think that needs to happen if they're going to keep doing this. And I think Maro had even written a blog post that said they might be scaling back on them a little bit. But I think if they don't, then this is what they need to do, because otherwise people are really, you know, going to get sick of them if they're not already.
Is blue really considered the color of open-mindedness in Magic?
Hello. Hello. I mean, it's the color that says no the most.
I know.
So that's a good point. Well, I mean, I think just the Simic combination is, you know, I think by itself, it might not necessarily be. But I think when you put it together with green, I think that that's sort of the, you know, the idea behind it is, you know, growth and nurture, but nurturing the mind in addition to like the body, maybe. I'm not really mm-hmm. sure, but that's a good point, Athena. So the last thing we're going to discuss today is an article that I found on ESPN.com that was talking about an organization called Smash Sisters. And, they are a group, similar to LPS, actually, Lady Planeswalker Society, that is looking to bring more women, into the Super Smash Brothers Melee scene, which I didn't even know was a thing. And so they interviewed the girls behind it, the women behind it, and they interviewed the women that make it up. And they were sort of talking about their experiences in esports and the goals for the group and things like that. And I really enjoyed this. I really enjoyed seeing how other groups are trying to bring women into gaming. I really liked their opinions on some things. And I feel like there's things that, you know, we as a Magic community could possibly learn from them. And so I was wondering what you all thought about this and the group called Smash Sisters.
I could really relate to this a lot. The feeling of feeling marginalized in predominantly male spaces or predominantly male activities, and wanting to find that camaraderie. And I think it's funny because I was actually having a discussion with a friend of mine about Lady Planeswalker Society, because for a long time, our goal has never been to nurture competitive Magic players. It's always been about openness, bringing in new players, and providing a fun space for people to enjoy the game, not necessarily a competitive space. And that was something that I always had to sort of wrestle with as I was coming up through the group, because I have always been a very competitive player and I have always wanted to push myself. And it was always a matter of, okay, how do I reconcile my competitiveness with the needs of this group? And that sort of led to a broader conversation about how in a lot of activities where most of the participants are male, a lot of these spaces that are carved out for women tend to focus on the fun and the camaraderie and not so much on the competition, and that it is very rare to find a space where you can collaborate with other women and be competitive, not just, you know, be social. I think a lot of these groups are meant to be social. And so it was really great to see that this was a space where women were coming together and pushing each other to be competitive. And I've been really pleased to see that we've been moving in that direction in Magic with the Play It Forward initiative, even just seeing, one of my favorite things in Magic recently has been seeing Jadine and Emma's friendship blossom over social media and seeing how they cheer each other on and work together. And I'm really glad to see that Magic is developing its own version of that, and that more women are coming together, not just to socialize and to commiserate, but also to compete.
That was very well said, Hallie. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Because, like, I totally agree with you. It's just, like, when I was reading this, it was kind of like I was picking apart, like, little pieces and trying to compare them to different things that happen in Magic, or arguments that people make to say that, well, these things don't happen in Magic and they don't happen elsewhere. And clearly, you know, that's not the case. One of the things I appreciate that the article addressed is that this is what progress looks like. And so you're seeing something that is showing, hey, these women want to play this game and they're serious about it and they want to connect, compete, they want to do all these things, but they also understand that they've had issues when they've tried to play the game, or that they've faced different kinds of situations like Lady Magic players have. And so to people within the Magic community that say, we don't have this problem, or this problem only exists in Magic and it doesn't exist other places, it's kind of a universal issue. And to have it highlighted in regard to a game like Super Smash Brothers is really eye-opening to me, and also just kind of further proof of there are these issues and there are different ways to go about how you're going to handle these situations. And I like that these all these women came together and were like, we're going to do this thing. We want to raise awareness to different things that are happening in the community, in their community, about people being even critical of them as women trying to come together. And it's just very interesting just to see how, even though they're doing something clearly different than what we are, we have similar goals, and that we have experienced similar things, and that we are existing in male-dominated spaces, you know, similar to a competitive, you know, video gaming. We're playing a card game, and some women in this game face challenges that men don't. And to just kind of see this from a different perspective is just very, very interesting. And I like that they wanted to come together to bring more women into the game, and they've done that, you know, and to be together, bond, compete, do all these things and help empower each other. And one thing that was cited in the article was that visibility definitely mattered. And that's definitely something that we've talked about, that other women have talked about, that allies to the cause have talked about, to be like, visibility matters in Magic. And you can even see it here in competitive video gaming. Clearly, visibility matters. And I just felt just kind of empowered after reading the article and seeing that this is not something that's just limited to Magic, and it is something that exists. And just to see people kind of just taking their power back and being like, we're going to do this and we're going to have a good time. We're not going to let anyone shoot us down. And I really applaud them for, you know, taking on like the beast, so to speak, and making it, you know, their own, and giving them a good place to come together, enjoy something that they like to do, be competitive, and feel like they're in a good space to do so.
I do agree. I think visibility is really important. I always struggle myself to think about how to promote more female professional players, I guess is the proper way to do it. Because in a lot of ways, I don't think being a professional Magic player is not something I would recommend to anyone to pursue. But I would like to see more women at the top tables, and I would like to see more women at the Pro Tour. And, you know, I've kind of toyed with myself, like, should we be doing female-only tournaments? Like, would that be something that would promote women in the game? Is something like Lady Planeswalker Society actually translating over into having more super competitive female players? Or is it kind of like limiting the scope of how far we can get women into the game? And it's cool. It's cool to see other games and see how they approach it and see what avenues they take and what we can learn from it. Yeah, it's just tricky though. I wish I had a better answer. I don't think I would play as much if I didn't have other competitive female friends. I think I would have quit a long time ago. And in fact, seeing Jadeen and Emma doing so well, you know, makes me want to try harder. I know after seeing them, like seeing Jadeen, you know, make some top eights and stuff, I think like, oh, I want to do that too. Like I want to be there and I want to do that. And I don't know. I wish I was more eloquent about this, but I'm really not.
It's good practice for your podcast.
I know. It's just hard. Like, especially when we're talking about, you know, gender and women in magic, because these are topics that are really important to me and I care a lot about, and I could talk for hours about them, but I still haven't really, they're all so nuanced that I haven't really distilled my thoughts into a quick soundbite, even if it's only a few minutes long.
No, I think it's perfect that you mentioned that, Athena, you know, because it is, you know, it is something that we try to do. I mean, unfortunately, most of the discussion tends to happen on social media. And, you know, some formats are not great at that. You know, I'm not sure that, you know, the debate is meant to be had on Twitter, you know, where you're only allowed 140 characters. And, you know, mm-hmm. some places are just not a good place to have that conversation. But unfortunately, that's really where most of it goes down. And I really love that you brought up nuance, Athena, because that's something that often is missing from the conversation. I know there were two things that I really related to in terms of this article. The first thing is sort of hitting the threshold. You know, we've been talking about the issue of women in magic for 2 years now on this show, and I'm not going to lie, I'm exhausted. And, you know, one of the things that the women who formed this group brought up is that, you know, they are aware of the issue of women in gaming. You know, they're aware of the harassment. They're aware of things of that nature. But eventually you just sort of hit this threshold where you're like, I gotta talk about something else. Can we please just talk about the game? Can we please talk about, strategy or something like that? You know, we just don't want this to be all that we talk about. And I remember somebody had made a comment a while back that the only time you ever see a woman write about magic, it's always about women in magic. And that's changed a little bit since then. But, you know, for a while, it did feel like that was kind of the case where, you know, you would see the big Gabby Spartz article, which took over. Then Megan Wolf had the big Megan Wolf article, but it was like, okay, can you come back and give us a deck tech? You know, can you come back and give us a strategy article? You know, this is the only time that it felt like women were being given the opportunity was when they only talk about themselves or they only talk about the hardships. And so, you know, I really appreciated that one of the women in this said, you know, after this many years of talking about women being harassed in gaming, we've all gotten tired of it. You know, we understand it's important, but we just want to talk about the game and play, you know, emphasis on play the game that we spend so much time talking about. The other thing I really appreciated is them mentioning the mantle, which is something else we've discussed about how you often feel pressure to be good because if you don't, you feel like you've ruined it for all women, you know, yeah. Where if you make a misplay, oh God, I've let all the women down. Or if I don't day two, I've, you know, ruined it for everybody. And, you know, they brought up something really good. She said, you know, we have a small group of women and they talk. If we fuck up, they talk. If we succeed, they talk. You know, we have eyes on us, you know, and the topic of women's tournaments is very controversial. And so we have to walk that line constantly because if we mess up for something that's not even related to gender, it can be spun into something on the internet. Like you see women's tournaments don't work. And, you know, that's a mantle I think that every female player has worn at some point of, you know, I've got to be good for my gender. And that's so difficult and that it weighs so much. And so I really appreciated that they talked about this because I've seen one Facebook post and one Twitter post after another of other women trying to verbalize that. And I just call it the mantle. Yeah. And so I really appreciated that they brought that up. And so I really like this. You know, I really appreciate the empowerment behind it. I think Play It Forward is doing something really good on our front. And I just look forward to seeing more communities like this spring up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be definitely interesting to see. I think, I don't know, when I think of my relationship to magic right now, it's like part I'm exhausted. Like every single time, you know, I appear on camera, I still face the same stuff that I started when I played the game. You still get people making nasty comments to you. You still have people judging you for your play skill, even when you're trying just to play for fun. Or when you are being competitive, if you make one small mistake, they make a mountain out of a molehill. And like, I'm tired of having that conversation or fighting back against it. But at the same time, you know, you'll be going along doing your thing and you're like, well, I haven't really had the women in magic conversation lately. And then something will come up and you're like, oh, I've got to do this again because I feel obligated to point out like what a jerk you're being or how wrong it is what you're saying. And I mean, I don't know if we're ever going to get to a point in Magic where we don't have to have that conversation anymore, because it feels like every 6 months something happens and it's like, well, let's talk about this again.
Yeah, and
I don't know. It's just frustrating.
I just want to say, though, that, you know, I think that sort of emphasizes, you know, what allies can do. You know, a lot of people will see things kind of go down and there's this feeling of, well, what can I do? That's what you can do. You know, when I see AJ Soccer jump in on a Twitter thread and like take control of the conversation or deflect from some of the heat that we might be getting, or Tom Martell even, you know, that's how you can be an ally. Like, I'm serious, you know, absolutely. Taking the weight off of some of us who've been doing this for so damn long. Mm-hmm. That's how you can help. You know, don't run to me and pull on my shirt and say, someone said a mean thing in the comments. You got a report button. Go hit that report button. Like, what do you need me to do? And so, you know, that's the number one question I get asked whenever someone listens to the show or it's made an impact on them or they see some of the shenanigans that go on. There's always this feeling, well, what can I do? That's what you can do. Like, if you want to be an ally, you know, take some of the weight off of those of us, you know, offer to, I think of it kind of like moving furniture, offer to like take that side of the couch for us, you know, help us lift mm-hmm. this couch that we've been holding for so long, or, mm-hmm. you know, deflect some of the conversation that we've had time and time again. That's the way to be a good ally. And so, you know, you brought up a really good point, Athena, just some of us are just so exhausted because we've been doing this for so long. Mm-hmm. And we really could use some helping hands to just not be the only ones carrying it. Mm-hmm. So before we go, I want to put out the call to our listeners. Next week is episode 100, our last episode of the Girlfriend Bracket, for the time being. And we thought it would be nice to include some audio clips from you all, our listeners, our friends, our fans. And so if you are willing, we are looking for about 30-second or less clips, with like your favorite moments from the show, any ways that might have inspired you. Go ahead and send those to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. And if we receive enough of them, we will go ahead and throw them into our final episode, as a way to say thank you, because if it weren't for you all, we wouldn't have been able to keep going like this for 100 episodes, and we wouldn't have been given, you know, the platforms that we built through doing the show, and we really wouldn't be here without our listeners. And so we want to say thank you for that and give you all a voice as much as you've given us one. So definitely go ahead and email us your sound clips. We're going to go ahead and say the deadline is the 19th. That's usually when I do my editing, will be the 19th or the 20th. So if you can get your clips in by then, we would love to feature you on our final episode.
So crazy. I cannot believe you guys are at episode 100.
I know, right?
Actually, yeah. I remember I listened to episode 1. It happened right after I moved to Vegas. And like, I was listening to it as I was unpacking my stuff. And now I look at where my life is now. I guess it's been like 2 years, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah, and it's just insane. So congratulations, guys.
Yeah, we feel the same way. It's like, you know, we look at everything and it's like, you know, if you would have told me that we would be here 2 years ago, I would have thought you lost your mind. And so it's been a really wild ride. And I mean, I think we're kind of going out on a high note and we're going out kind of on our own terms. And I just can't believe we're here. And so it's been nuts. Yeah. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. And you can also find me at HalCanSan on Instagram.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ@gmail.com. My Snapchat is CrypticCommand with K's. My blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. And you can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/DeCriz. And I made the announcement before, but again, as of the 24th, I should be streaming regularly on, I change it to Wednesdays and Fridays, because potentially Aaron and I will be streaming on Monday nights. So stay tuned for more information about those things, and thanks so much for all your support.
And Athena, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. I love everything you do. I think you're one of the most fascinating people in Magic. I would love to get to know you further sometime in the future. If we're at an event, you should definitely hit me up. But if anybody's enjoyed listening to you, where can they find everything that you're doing and how can they reach you?
So for my personal stuff, you can find me on Twitter at _Elantris, ELANTRIS_. On YouTube, it's youtube.com/Elantris, and on Twitch, it's twitch.tv/Elantris. And then as for the stuff that I do, the Super Leagues are on Tuesday nights starting at 5 p.m. Pacific. Our team draft Super League is going to start right after the Pro Tour, so to the Tuesday after the Pro Tour, so you can tune in for that. And then our I have a podcast. My podcast, Married to the Game, you can find on, oh, this is so weird, on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn and all those fun places.
You're going to have to do what we all did when we got started. You're just going to have to look in the mirror and be like, I have a podcast. Okay, let's try that again. I have a podcast. And to do different takes of it until it finally just flows if you're a podcaster.
Yeah, it's cool. It's definitely something new for me. It's been interesting to, I listened back to our first episode and I was like, this is so strange just to hear.
Oh, don't do it. I don't listen to ours. I mean, I have to edit them, but yeah, I still can't bring myself to watch Magic Mics or things like that. I just can't. I tend to think of the work that I do like grenades, and I just sort of pull the pin and I duck behind my sandbags. I toss it out there and I cover my ears and I hope to God I don't blow anybody up. And that's sort of how I view the work that I do. Like, oh, here you go. Hope you like it. Oh, and then hope it lands. So I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalEstrus. It's OriginalEstrus. You can email me at OriginalEstrus@gmail.com. Twitch.tv/OriginalEstrus. I stream every Tuesday and Thursday evenings, sometimes on the weekends. The show is on Twitter at @TheGFBracket. You can email us at TheGirlfriendBracket@gmail.com. And you can find us every Friday at GatheringMagic.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you to our amazing guest, Athena. And we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.